The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Anyway, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know that my next guest is truly one of my favorite people. In fact, he is probably giving me more quotes than I have used over the time. And I always give him credit for it. But he truly is a very, very bright man with a tremendous history on Wall Street. And as Peggy just got through saying, just a really good guy. So we're really pleased this morning to have with us Mr. Sam Stovall, U.S. Equity Strategist for S&P Capital IQ. Good morning, Sam.
Nick and Peggy, good to talk to you again.
Nice talking to you, sir. All right, I guess I just need to start off because, everybody starts off with a topic that we haven't talked about much for the last 55 years. Are you in the yes, they're going to raise tomorrow camp?
Yes, I am. I think they're going to raise tomorrow. I think they're going to raise four more times next year, and we end 2016 with a Fed funds rate at 1.25%.
Wow. Wow, so you just think they're going to clip along now? What happened? What about the and I don't know. You're both you and Standard & Poor's are really students of history, but I've heard from time to time that the Federal Reserve does not like to be a participant in the political process. So frequently they'll go quiet after the spring is over with, and as we go into the election process. From the sounds of things, you're looking for four more increases. Are you looking for them pretty much quarter by quarter by quarter next year?
Yes, and actually you're bringing up a very good point, that I wrote an article back in early November called Fed Fiction, because a lot of people thought, the Fed doesn't raise rate in December because that would end up creating a liquidity crisis, and also the Fed does not like to play politics, so you're not going to see Fed rate increases in an election year, let alone, focusing on the third quarter of election years. Well, actually, what I found is that, they've done that several times, that they've raised short-term rates five times in December, going back to 1965. They've raised rates six times in the third quarter of presidential election years, going back to 1948. So really, the Fed focuses on what the economy needs. Maybe it likes to reassure people that it is independent of other political branches of the government, but really it just does not want to get too far behind the curve.
Now, do you think, you mentioned the word need, do you think that the economy will need those four increases next year?
I think so, because really the concern is the inflating of asset bubbles. Right now we're looking at valuations on the S&P 500, which are at best fair value, and at worst, pretty expensive. So I would tend to say that because there have been a lack of alternatives out there, that really investors have been gravitating toward the higher yielding stocks in general. And so the worry is that we're dealing with valuations that were like they were back in 2000, but I don't think they want to go that far, and that's why they're trying to recalibrate rather than restrain the overall economy.
So let's talk about the market. I mean, what do you think of the market? I mean, what are you looking for next year? And why was this year such a total miss? I was looking at an article that was written today that was talking about how far off Wall Street was, that they went out there and they looked at 40 economists and what they thought would happen this year to the market, and obviously it did not happen there. And also, it always seems to me about this time of year, everybody trots out their predictions for next year. We always generally, particularly for GDP, for instance, tend to always overshoot and come up with a number that's much higher than what it turns out to be. What does 2016 look like in your crystal ball?
Well, first off, I have to do a little admitting myself that my expectation was that what we were going to see for 2015 is pretty much what we think we're going to get for 2016. When I looked at my 2015 forecast, I realized that with a lot of things, all I had to do was to change the date, and the article would be written. I think the reason why economists and strategists miss the mark every so often is because, or why they sound like they're always optimistic is, let's face it, going back to World War II, the S&P 500 has posted a calendar year total return that was positive 80% of the time. So first off, when people say that investing is gambling, I say, well, I'd love to know which casino pays the gambler 80% of the time. So when you are attempting to be negative, when you think you're going to have a bearish scenario in the coming 12-month period, you really have to feel pretty confident that that's the case because you're going against an 80% probability. So when we started last year, our expectations were 8.6% gain in earnings, and that was where the real miss was. Our economic forecast was for a sub 3% growth, which we've been getting since the summer of 2009, since this expansion began. And that's pretty much what we got this year and what we're expecting next year, 2.7% growth. The Fed was going to raise rates. First, it was in the second quarter, then the third quarter. Now it's the fourth quarter of this year. So a bulk of the rate increases are likely to be occurring next year, not this year. So our expectation is it's going to be a good year, but not a great year. We have a year-end target of 2250 for the S&P 500, and if this year closes where we think it will, it'll end up being a mid to high single-digit price appreciation for the year ahead.
Yeah, I noticed in your 2016 outlook an interesting point that you made, that only in 1947 to 48 was one flat year followed by another flat year, so I assume you're not looking at a flat year coming into this year, but only one that's modestly higher. Let's talk about one of the real difficulties for 2015 to see what you think about 2016, which is energy and oil. That certainly has had a big impact on what happened this year. What do you think about next year? What are you looking for? Do you think we're going to bottom out at some point out there? What's your thoughts on oil?
Oil has always been a very challenging forecast because not only is it supply and demand economics, but it's also geopolitics. What does Saudi Arabia want to do? Do they want to punish Russia, Iran? Do they want to punish the U.S., the Bakken shale oil trade, where they're trying to maintain their death grip, if you will, on global oil markets? And so I think that's why they've been unwilling to ease, or I should say to, to reduce the amount of output, because the thought is if they can try to grab more market share, so much the better. Our feeling, however, is that because of all the capital expenditure programs that are coming offline, combined with an improvement in economic growth, we think that oil prices will be bottoming fairly soon and gradually creep higher in the new year.
Okay. All right. So you think a little more optimism for oil. I'm sure that everybody that owns oil, particularly in our broadcast area, which is Texas through Colorado, appreciates that comment. I tell you, we don't have very long, Sam, for a break, so I think I'll just wait until after the break. But what I'd like to talk about when we come back is that generally the third year of an election cycle is a good one. We haven't had that. Will the election have any impact on the market next year? So we'll ask our guest, Sam Stovall, that. Sam is strategist with S&P. Got to run. Be back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have one of our very favorite guests on, a man who, you know, one of the things I like about Sam Stovall is he can take very complicated statistics and strategies and jargon from Wall Street and bring it down to a level in which we understand. And Sam is U.S. equity strategist with S&P Capital IQ. Sam, just before the break, I was mentioning that historically I've always read that the third year of a cycle of any presidential term is usually the best year, the year preceding an election year, and that election years can be, you know, good or bad depending upon the vitriol and the bitterness that goes into a campaign. It turns out that the third year this year obviously has not been that great, although it, at least as far as today is concerned, it seems to be doing a little bit better. But right now, I still think we're underwater. Are we not? Are we still negative for the year right now?
Yes, we are. And that if we do end up closing in the red for the full year, then this will be the first time since World War II in which the third year was negative. We came close in 1947 and then also even closer in 2011. You actually have to go to the third decimal point in order to show that it was negative. We were down 0.002 in 2011. So, I don't know, I sort of say that that's being equal. The reason that the third year traditionally is good is that the party in power wants to stay in power, so they usually try to introduce some sort of stimulative legislation that will affect the economy positively by the time voters go back to the polls. Investors or anticipators, they then buy in the third year rather than waiting to see if the stimulus works in the fourth year. But with a split Congress, we have really not had the success. President Obama has not been able to initiate any kind of stimulus because, let's face it, the Fed's really trying to remove stimulus, not add to it.
Yeah, stimulus. Yeah, that's another way of buying votes, by handing out money from Washington, D.C. Right, but that's a different topic. All right, so we'll go into this year. One of the quotes that you brought us that I really loved, and it's the one I've repeated the most, and I realize you weren't author of that. You made it very clear one day on the show, but it was still, I was unaware of it until you brought it to my attention, was the fact that the market, they called it the TINA market, there is no alternative market. And for a lot of folks, that's been correct, particularly for the people looking for fixed income. They've come into high income stocks, the MLPs, which lately have been a surprise, REITs and various things like this that have high dividends because they could not find it at the banks. Do you think that moniker still holds? Is the market still that there is no alternative vehicle out there?
I think to the large extent that is still true, because if the Fed is going to be raising interest rates, then that's probably going to cause the dollar, if not to strengthen further, then at least to remain firm. And with a firm dollar, that usually is bad for commodities, and higher rates themselves are bad for bonds. So investors are going to stick with equities, and then also realizing that the yield on the S&P 500 is within one percentage point of the yield on the 10-year note. And going back more than 65 years, whenever we have had that kind of a scenario where the dividend yield is very close to the 10-year note yield, the S&P 500 has gained an average of about 13% in the coming 12-month period, so it still performs relatively well. So I think that equities can't be counted out just yet, but you do have to be careful and make sure that the valuations don't get too stretched.
Is there anything out there that could cause you to think that or would alarm you that could cause this market to really have a significant pullback? Obviously, we had a pullback this year for the first time in a very long time, but it wasn't so brutal that it really knocked people out of the market. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, this market doesn't really have much room to grow. I'm sure you've seen a lot of the prognostications that I have, and one of them was J.P. Morgan, which a little surprising to me when they came out a couple of months ago and said that the market for the next 5 to 7 years was unlikely to move any higher than 4 to 8%. They're roughly looking for a relatively maybe a slight upward bias, but a fairly flat market, not just in 2016, but beyond. And a lot of people seem to be climbing on to that. Goldman was out with a 5-year forecast that was very similar. So it looks to me like a lot of folks out there are predicting that, okay, you know, we're going to have, you know, maybe a slight upward bias next year. I think they all agree with you on that one. Not a purely flat market, but that the upward bias is going to be very minimal and will do so for many years beyond, until we get what looks to be a demographic lift starting in 2022. What is your thoughts about the long-term prognosis for the market?
Well, I think the long-term really has to be dependent upon earnings growth. And along with that, revenue increases, because we've had a lot of companies that have been able to boost their earnings by engaging in cost-cutting efforts combined with reducing share count through share buybacks. And, you know, it's like somebody who just pulls their belt tighter and tighter, you know, sooner or later you're going to strangle yourself. So I think that what has to happen is that we've got to see an improvement in overall revenues. We've got to see an improvement in the consumer. We think that'll happen next year because we think the unemployment rate is going to fall to about 4.6%, and we think that wages are going to rise by 3.2% versus the current 2.4%. So consumers are going to feel a little bit better because they have more money in their pocket relative to inflation. More people are working, and so that could then lead to a healthier consumer spending environment, which we actually think will end up being pretty much the driver of economic growth next year.
Now, could the interesting that you mentioned wages, because could the wage pressure actually be a negative on earnings? We had a member of NABE, we had the president on NABE last week, and she was talking about that, about how that a lot of her members were feeling what she called was wage pressure. With obviously wages rising and earnings not rising at the same pace. And I thought, well, maybe that starts hitting the bottom line in a negative way. What is your thought?
Well, wages certainly are important, because the more you pay your employees, the less you have that falls to the bottom line. But all things being equal, if you are able to increase your revenues, and if you have the appropriate operating leverage, then as you increase your revenues, it outpaces the cost of doing that kind of business. So it could end up being more of a net positive to earnings when it does finally flow to the bottom line. So, you know, the real question is earnings. I don't see PE multiples expanding in a rate tightening year. So it really all boils down to how much whittling away of earnings growth that we see for calendar year 2016.
But you're looking for a positive year next year.
Yes, I am. Positive year, middle single-digit price appreciation. Stocks really are likely to be the asset class of choice. International could do relatively well, but a lot of those returns might get taken away by a stronger dollar.
That's good to know, Sam. Listen, thank you so much for being with us. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Absolutely.
And give my best to your father.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks a lot, Mike. Happy holidays.
You too. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.